Morning. Today's daf and Shabbos Nun Aleph. We are on the Mishnah on the top of Nun Aleph, Amud Aleph, and we are concluding today the Perek of Hatmana, fourth Perek of Shabbos, dedicated to the topic of Hatmana, insulation, insulating your food, either A, in order so that it get warmer, B'davar Amosif Hevel, or B, just simply to preserve and maintain its current heat, and that's B'davar She'ein Amosif Hevel. And the rules are very straightforward, as we've been discussing now last number of days since we started the Perek. It's a short Perek. Perek starting at Menzainim and Beis. And the rules are that a davar hamosif hevel, anything that's adding heat, one is not allowed to do hatmana. And that's true both on Shabbos, it's true before Shabbos as well. Why can't I do hatmana b'davar hamosif hevel? And especially consider the fact that if we're talking about before Shabbos, what's the issue? But the issue is, of course, is that if it's davar hamosif hevel, if it's something that's adding heat, so there's really very little difference between any material that we described and that of coals. And if we end up using coals, we're going to end up stoking the coals. And so therefore, the Chachamim banned this activity because one might end up stoking the coals. And then we talk about davar she'ein amosif hevel, a material that doesn't add heat. And one is allowed to insulate a food before Shabbos, but davar she'ein amosif hevel. However, on Shabbos itself, you cannot do hatmana, but davar she'ein amosif hevel. Now, here the question again. If it's on Shabbos and it's davar she'ein amosif hevel, so why can't I do the hatmana? It's not going to add the heat. I'm not adding to the heat. All I'm doing is looking to preserve the heat. So Rashi says it in today's daf a number of times, a couple of times, that on Shabbos itself, if you start getting involved in the process of insulation, what you may end up finding is that the food itself is not fully cooked. You are looking to preserve the heat, but meanwhile, what you discovered is that the food is not really fully cooked. And so once you're involved in the hatmana process, so what you may end up doing is, in your goal, in your desire of having good food and hot food, you may end up wanting to make a fire and cook the food. So on Shabbos itself, you cannot do hatmana, but davar she'ein amosif hevel. Before Shabbos, this kind of hatmana is allowed. You're allowed to do hatmana before Shabbos, but davar she'ein amosif hevel. Good. And over the course of the Mishnah has really spent the time discussing which materials are considered davar amosif hevel and davar she'ein amosif hevel. We are now in the Mishnah on the top of Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, continuing and concluding today the topic of Hatmana. The Mishnah says, Lo kisami bo yom, lo yichasenu mishetechshach. If you did not cover it from the day before the day started, so you cannot cover it mishetechshach. Meaning, we're talking obviously over here of a davar she'ein amosif hevel. There is an allowance to cover it before Shabbos, but if you fail to do so before Shabbos, so then you can't do it on Shabbos itself. Now, if you did cover it going into Shabbos, meaning you did do a hatmana before Shabbos, and on its own it was nisgaleh, it was uncovered, so then mutalich soso. So here we're learning a chiddush in the Mishnah, and that is as long as you did the act of hatmana before Shabbos, so then on Shabbos itself, let's say the insulation falls off, you can re-insulate. So even though on Shabbos itself you cannot insulate b'davar she'ein amosif hevel, but here we're talking about re-insulation, and that would be fine. And then the Mishnah concludes, Mamale Sakito Venosa Lasachas Akarla Sachas Akesas. You could fill up the urn with water, and you could put it under the pillow or under some sort of blanketing. And over here, as Rashi points out, and it will become clear in the Gemara, we're talking about cold water. And what you're looking to do is preserve the cold water. And this is also a hatmana, but this is not the hatmana preservation of heat, which we've been discussing throughout the entire parak. But here we're talking about the insulation of cold. And the Mishnah says if the goal over here is to insulate cold, that would be totally fine. What would be the concern? Why would you think that it's usher? So stay tuned because we're going to be discussing that in the Gemara itself. As far as the ruling of re-insulation, let's take a look together at Tosos. Tosos over here, Kisavan is Gala Mutal Lichsoso, Nira Leridu Huadinda Mutal Liglosibi Adayim, Velachzor Velichsoso. So the Re says now, you may get misled by the Mishnah, says the Re, but don't get misled by the Mishnah. Meaning, you may be of the opinion that the Mishnah says that when is reinsulation okay? That's only if the insulation falls off on its own. That would be a simple reading of the Mishnah. And what you may say is that, well, if I took off the insulation biadayim, I actively took off the insulation, then I can't reinsulate. But the Re says, but that's not true. Reinsulation would be mutter on Shabbos, period. Whether it comes off on its own or whether you take it off. Now, the obvious question, well, it sounds like the bigger chiddush would be that if I took it off with Be'adayim, if I took it off with my hands, so then I'm allowed to reinsulate, that would seem to be a bigger chiddush. Why does the Mishnah give us the erroneous impression that the only time you can re-insulate is only when it falls off on its own? So the Re addresses that. So what the Mishnah wants to teach us is the following. Let's say, when does the, in our Mishnah scenario, when does the insulation fall off? It falls off even before Shabbos. And here's what the Mishnah wants to tell us. That if the insulation falls off before Shabbos, on its own, even under those circumstances, here comes the Chiddush. Even though, going into Shabbos, it wasn't insulated. But I did insulate it before Shabbos, it just happened to fall off on its own. Under those circumstances, I can call what I'm doing on Friday night re-insulation. Aval im gilal biyadai mi ba'oyom. But now let's go to the contrast, where let's say before Shabbos I took the insulation off kedei lichsosa mishetechshach, and now I'm going to reinsulate on Friday night. Also lichsosa mishetechshach the damyale tchilas hatmana. That you're not allowed to do. That's the point of the Mishnah. That if I be a dime actively remove the insulation before Shabbos, when I re-insulate on Friday night, that's not called re-insulation. That's called haschalas hatmana. This is now going to be considered like you're doing hatmana for the first time. That's the point the Mishnah wants to teach us. According to Tosfos, that means to say that if I were to remove the insulation on Friday night, because going into Shabbos, it is an insulated food. Again, this is all under the discussion of a hatmana davar she'en mosif hevel. It's not a material that adds the heat. So it says Tosfos, under those circumstances, I can re-insulate. Re-insulation would be fine. And the point the Mishnah is making is that this would not be true on Friday afternoon. If the insulation falls off on its own on Friday afternoon, so then you can re-insulate on Friday night. But if you take the insulation off on Friday afternoon, you cannot re-insulate on Friday night. That's how Tosfos understands the Mishnah. We go to the Gemara. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Shmuel Mutalat Minasatzone. So the Gemara quotes, in the name of Shmuel, that one is allowed to insulate cold. Now I'm Rabbi Yosef Maikamashmuel Antanina. Now Rabbi Yosef says, thank you very much, Shmuel. But I knew that already from our Mishnah. Our Mishnah taught us that. Memale Adam Kito Manosin Tachazakar Tachazakesis. That's exactly the last ruling of the Mishnah. So Amale Abai Tuva Kamashmalan. So Abai comes and defends, and he says, no. Even with the Mishnah, I still need the statement of Shmuel. If you look at our Mishnah is talking about water. And I would have thought that maybe a special allowance was given to water. But something that I normally do hatmana with, meaning a food, and as Rashi points out over here, what do I want to do with food? So in this particular case, what I want to do is I want to keep it cold. But what do I normally want to do with food? I normally want to get it hot. And so therefore, if I start getting involved in hatmana with food, and even though in this particular scenario, I'm insulating to preserve its cold, but normally with food, I'm insulating in order to preserve its heat. So one might have thought that under those circumstances, no hatmana would be allowed. Not for hot, and not even for cold. So kamash malan. So the Gemara says that's the Chiddush. The Chiddush of Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel is that even though we're talking about food, we're not just talking about water, hatmana for cold would be okay, would be acceptable. Amar Rav Huna asalat min satzoni. So the Gemara quotes now Rav Huna. Now we have in the Gemara the words Amar Rav Huna Marav, but as you see on the side, and it'll make much more sense as we go through the Gemara, Amar Rav Huna Amar Rebbe. Asalat min satzoni, one is not allowed to insulate the cold. Now that goes against everything we just got done saying. And we're going to see this in just a moment. The Rebbe does give an allowance to insulate cold. So the Gemara says, well, Rebbe himself went through stages. Before he heard from Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, and we'll see in just a moment what he heard, before he heard from him, so he himself, Rebbe, was of the position that you cannot do hatmana with cold. And again, why not? Because once you get involved in the activity of hatmana, even though in this case it's fine, you're just preserving the cold, but once you get involved in the activity of hatmana, you're then going to do other forms of hatmana, i.e. the preservation of hot, which you're not allowed to do on Shabbos. It does sound a little bit like zera l'gzera, but over here you could simply argue kulachad gzera. In other words, gzera is just simply don't do hatmana. That was Rebbe's original position. But in just a moment, we're going to see the details. But then he heard from Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Yossi, who said that it was okay, that one is allowed to be matzmen cold. And from that point going forward, he changed his tune. And now the Gemara gives us a story. Rabbi was sitting down, issuing his ruling that he said that he felt that one is not allowed to insulate cold. Along comes Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yossi and quotes his father, obviously being Rabbi Yossi. And he says that my father gave an allowance to do hatmana on cold. Amar kvar horizakein. And when Rabbi heard this, Rabbi immediately capitulated and said, if Rabbi Yossi was of the opinion that one is allowed to do hatmana with cold, so I'm going to change my own position and one can do hatmana with cold. Amra papa bore kama mechamen zezem. So Rabbi Papa now makes the following observation. Let's make a good observation about how these Tanaim treated one another and the kind of love and respect they had for one another. She'ilu Rabbi Yossi Kaim, because the Gemara says, here's what we could argue. That if Rabbi Yossi would be alive in the days of Rabbi, Hayakuf of Yoshev Lifnei Rabbi, what he would do is he would be subordinate to Rabbi. And how do I make such a conjecture? Deha Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi d'mamale makom avos av hava. Because we know that Rabbi Shmuel ended up replacing his father Rabbi Yossi. And we know that Rabbi Shmuel was subordinate to Rabbi. So it's fair to speculate that Rabbi Yossi also would have been subordinate to Rabbi. And meanwhile, when Rabbi heard Rabbi Yossi issue the psak post-mortem, but he heard him issue the psak that one is allowed to do atmana, immediately Rabbi's reaction is, oh, that was Rabbi Yossi's position. And even though, had he been alive, and Rabbi's not saying this, but had he been alive, he would have been subordinate to me. Oh, but Rabbi Yossi said it. You know what? I'm changing my position. The amount of respect and they have for and the love they had for one another. So that basically forced Rabbi's hand in terms of yielding to the position of Rabbi Yossi. And Rabbi himself, from this point going forward, changed his position and said that one is allowed to do hatmana with cold. This particular Gemara is brought in Sanhedrin in the third parak, beginning of the third parak, towards the beginning of the third parak. And the Gemara uses this as a platform to point out that this is specific to the Tanaim of Eretz Yisrael, not necessarily the Tanaim of Bavel. So the Chachmei Bavel. Okay, see the Gemara in Sanhedrin who limits this to the Chachmei Eretz Yisrael. But anyway. Amle Rav Nachman L'dar Abde. The Gemara now tells the following incidents. We are halfway down in Nun Aleph Amud Aleph. So Rav Nachman talks to his servant Daru. The Gemara often tells about the relationship that Rav Nachman has to his Eved. Presumably he's an Eved Kanani, but he had a lot of regard for his Eved Kanani. Anyway, so he says to him a couple of things. Number one, Atmin Li Tzone. So he says to him, I want you to do hatmana for me. I want you to insulate coals for me. And number two, vaisli ma'ida achim kepel arma. And you can bring me water that was cooked by a non-Jew, and that would be fine. So shama Rabbi Ami ve'ikpid. So Rabbi Ami heard this, and Rabbi Ami was upset. I'm Rav Yosef ma'itam ikpid. So Rav Yosef says to Rabbi Ami, I don't understand why you're upset with Rav Nachman. Both of these positions that he hold are totally defensible positions. So ma'itam ikpid kerav vasa avid. Rav Nachman's following like his Rebbeim. Chadak Rav, the Chadak is Shmuel. He's holding like Rav. He's holding like Shmuel. Kishmuel Damer Rav Yehuda Meshmuel Motalat Min Nesatzonim. As far as insulating the cold, so Rav Nachman's Rebbe. Remember, Rav Nachman studied under Shmuel. So Rav Nachman's Rebbe Shmuel was of the opinion that one's allowed to insulate cold. So all Rav Nachman's doing is just simply following his Rebbe. That's a perfectly defensible position. And on top of that, Rav Nachman's also following Rav. Now it's interesting. I don't have a recollection that Rav Nachman was a student also of Rav. Certainly the Gemara says that regarding Rav Yehuda. Okay, so, but the Gemara here says it. So I gotta reprogram. So Rav Nachman also is following his other Rebbe Rav. The Amar Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak Amar Rav. Kol shehu nechal kamo shehu chai ein bo mishum bishul enachrin. Anything that could be eaten in a raw state is not subject to bishul akum. Meaning, when he told Daru to get water that was cooked by a non-Jew, what could be the potential problem? So the potential problem is bishul akum. One is not allowed to eat food that was prepared and cooked by a non-Jew. This is a prohibition of bishul akum. The Gemara Avodah Zarah discusses this at length. And so, over here, when you have a non-Jew cooking water, is that going to be an issue of Bishlakim? And it's not going to be an issue of Bishlakim because it fits into one of the basic exceptions, exclusions of Bishlakim. One of them is that if this particular food can be eaten in its raw state, and then you have the non-Jew cook it, that is not going to be under the legislation of Bishlakim. The other one is that in order for a food to be considered Bishlakim, it has to be Ola al Shulchan Malachim. It has to be a kind of food, a kind of dish that's presented to the king. If it is not a significant food like that, so then it's not going to be subject to Bishlakim. Okay, and obviously, in terms of the halacha, much to discuss in terms of what exactly the parameters of that is. But anyway, so when you have a non-Jew cooking water, obviously water is something that could be eaten in its non-cooked state. And so therefore, when a non-Jew cooks it, it's not going to be subject to Bishlakim. Good. So the Gemara says, so the truth of the matter is, I don't understand why you're upset. This is Rav Yosef saying to Rabbi Ami, Rav Nachman over here was just simply following his Rebbeim. He is following the halacha. Why are you upset? So the Gemara says, V'hu Savar, now he's holding, he meaning Rabbi Ami, who is upset with Rav Nachman. And the practices of Rav Nachman is because Adam Chashav Shani. Because Rav Nachman obviously is an Adam Chashav. He's somebody who is considered of really high regard. He's a role model to others. And so therefore he has to operate not just within the law, but he even has to go a little bit above the law as well. Really interesting Rashi over here. Rashi writes, Adam Chashav Shani. Rashi says, Sha'aroa says, Shumekel, Omeid Umekel Yoser. Because when you have somebody who is on such a high level, so here when you see him using certain kulas, now in terms of the Hatmana, we already saw that even though you're insulating cold, it's something which is controversial. We saw that Rebbe himself took a position that he, at least in the beginning of his life, he felt it was usur. So, and Rebbe did change his position, but it's a controversial point. And okay, so you and I can be mekel, but somebody like Rav Nachman now, once he enjoys that particular kula and people see him, so they say, oh, Rav Nachman entitles himself to certain leniencies, so I can as well. And you will not be working with the same threshold of Rav Nachman. In other words, he uses these kulas. I'm not on Rav Nachman's level. I'll go even further down and be even more mekel. In terms of Bishlakim, it's a little bit strange because there really is no back and forth regarding Nechal Kamoshu Chai. Meaning it is a kula, but at the same time, however, it's not open to controversy. The Gemara over there in Avodah Zarah doesn't make it sound like anyone is machmer in that particular issue. But okay, anyway, but once you see Rav Nachman allowing himself these kinds of leniencies, so you'll basically say, if Rav Nachman can help himself to those leniencies, I'm not Rav Nachman, I'll help myself to even more. That's the way Rashi understands it. Really interesting Rashi. We are on Anunalf Amadalf at the two dots, about two-thirds of the way downtown Rabbanan. Afa Bishamru Ein Tomnin. The Gemara now is going to be quoting a Tosefta, fourth parak, so Tosefta is dealing with the issues of Atmana. And as we are winding down and getting to the end of this parak, so there are a couple of loose ends to tie up regarding Atmana. And this Tosefta really is going to be covering a couple more additional points regarding Hatmana. So the Tosefta starts off. A person cannot insulate food after it gets dark. We already learned this. Even if it's something that's not going to add heat, it's only preserving the heat. Still, one cannot do Hatmana with these items. If it is already an insulated food, and all you're doing is just simply adding to the insulation, that would be allowed. Kesuduo said, now here, the Gemara is going to be very specific in terms of what allowances do you have to add insulation. So let's say it's insulated with sadinim, and you want to swap it out. So let's say the food is wrapped in the sadinim. Sadinim are some sort of sheets. It is providing insulation, but let's call it minor insulation, but it's insulated. And now, here's what I want to do. What I want to do is, I want to even reinforce the insulation by putting glufkarin on. Rashi describes it as a coat. Okay, it's a thicker material. So fine, so that you could do. Also, what you can do is that you could take off the glufgrin and put on sedinim, meaning you can adjust the insulation. As long as it's already insulated going into Shabbos, and we also have to add, it's a davar she'eino mosif hevel. It's not something that adds heat, it just maintains the heat. So you can adjust the degree of insulation in terms of how much heat it's going to maintain. Taking a thick insulation and swapping out for a thinner one, or the opposite. Another point, says Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, insulation will be prohibited, but only in the kli rishon. But if I were to transfer it from a kli rishon to a kli sheni, and as we said already a number of times, when I transfer something to a kli rishon to kli sheni, its heat potency is significantly diminished, even though it's still hot, but its potency is reduced. And once I transfer something into a kli sheni, so then there is no problem with installation within a kli sheni. But we'll add, the Gemara doesn't say it straight out, but it seems to be an extraordinarily salient point, only b'davar she'eino mosif hevel, only with something that doesn't add heat. And then the Gemara just simply throws in, this does not seem to be part of the Tosefta, as it's here written in Aramaic, but the Gemara just throws in a one-liner in terms of helping us understand. Because since I'm moving it from a kli rishon to a kli sheni, I'm clearly not interested in cooking it, just the opposite. We're now cooling it down, so therefore insulation is not going to be a concern, because again, let's remind each other, and Rashi here writes it. Why is insulation going to be prohibited on Shabbos with something that only maintains the heat? Because once I'm involved in the insulation of a food in order to preserve its heat and I discover it to be totally not cooked, I may end up now trying to cook it up on Shabbos. Over here, by virtue of the fact that we are now moving it from a kli rishon to a kli sheni, that is clear indication that I am not interested in cooking it anymore. Just the opposite. I'm looking to cool it down. But even as I'm looking to cool it down just a little bit, I want to preserve that heat. But here there is no concern that I may end up cooking it. So that is an explanation of why there is no issue of atmana within a kli sheni. Just practically speaking, that would mean, very simply, that what you're allowed to do on Shabbos is take the water out of an urn and put it into a thermos. There is no issue of atmana within a kli sheni. Continuing in the Tosefta, tamam b'kisa b'davar anita b'Shabbos. Let's say you do hatman and you cover it with something which is not muksa. Davar anita means something that you can move, meaning it's not muksa. Or let's say that the majority of the insulation is muksa. However, the top, meaning where the lid is, I use the material that's not muksa. So now there's no problem whatsoever in either case. Even in the latter case where the non-muksa is on the top, so you just simply move the non-muksa to the side. It's not muksa. You take the pot out. You can remove the pot. You can put the pot back in. Meaning re-insulation, like we already said at the beginning of today's shiur, is going to be mutter on Shabbos. Taman v'kisa b'davar she'eino nita b'Shabbos. Let's say you do hatmana and you cover it with muksa, meaning that the insulation is muksa throughout. Or let's say the vast majority of the insulation is not muksa, but what is on the lid is muksa. Im haya megula miksaso noto machzer. So if some of it is megula, if some of it is uncovered, meaning if you can access the lid directly, so that's fine, noto machzer. So then you take it out. The fact that some of the insulation is going to fall to the side, that's tiltum min asad, as we already pointed out, you can't directly move muksa, but indirectly, one is allowed to move muksa on Shabbos. The imlav eino noto l'machzer. However, if we're not in a position where the muksa could just move to the side, so then, and what's going to end up happening is that you'll have the collapse of the muksa material as you take the lid out, so then eino noto l'machzer. You can't take it out and put it back in again, because that's going to require you to directly move the muksa, which one is not allowed to do on Shabbos. Good. So over here, this part of the Tosefta is just dealing with the issues, which we quite frankly already dealt with earlier in this parak, and that is what happens in the insulation material is in fact muksa. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Na'ori Shal Pishtan Daka Harei Kazeva. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that when I have the fine powder that comes off of the flaxseed, that is to be treated like zevel. Now hopefully you remember this because we quoted this a couple of days ago within our parak. Meaning Rabbi Yehuda was commenting on the Mishnah. It was not clear what exactly was what exactly Rabbi Yehuda was saying. But now in this brisa, which we already quoted earlier, what he was saying is that when you have the fine material that comes off of a flaxseed, we treat that like zevel. Zevel, we already established, is a davar hamosif hevel. And according to Rabbi Yehuda, the fine material off the flaxseed also is a davar hamosif hevel. And he argued with the Tanakhama because the Tanakhama of the Mishnah did not feel that way. Minicha mechan al gabe mechan. And here the Mishnah talks about putting one pot on top of another pot. Now, in the context of this Tosefta, it sounds like the simplest reading to read this is that this is a continuation of the discussion of Hatmana. Now, it really does sound that way, meaning every point here in this Tosefta is talking about Hatmana. And so this part of the Tosefta seemingly also is talking about Hatmana as well. That's an easy way to read it. However, not everyone reads it this way. And the truth of the matter is that as we're going to get to the end of the Tosefta, which is really the end of the Perek, we're going to see that the Tosefta takes a left-hand turn and talks about snow on Shabbos. So it could be that this portion of the Tosefta is not talking about Tatmana, and it's just talking about rewarming food on Shabbos. That's another way to read it. And obviously this plays a lot of important halachic role, because it basically speaks to the idea of if I want to rewarm food on Shabbos, I could take this pot of food or this tin and put it on top of another pot of food. That is a way to read this Tosefta. And in terms of how it translates into practical halacha, so I highly recommend that you speak to your local Orthodox Rav. But we're going to just read the Braisa. Minicha mechan agabe mechan. One is allowed to put one pot of food on top of another pot of food, meaning the lower pot is on the fire and cooking. And what I want to do with the upper pot is just simply warm it up again. One is allowed to do that. Ukedera agabe kedera. And one can put a kedera on top of another kedera. Now, Rashi over here says the difference between mecham and kedera is that mecham is made up of metal. The kedera is made up of earthenware. Aval lo kedera agabe mecham, mecham al gabe kedera. But one cannot put a kedera on top of a mecham or a mecham on top of a kedera. Not totally clear why it would be that would make a difference. But nevertheless, so if I'm putting one pot on top of another pot, so under those circumstances, it would be okay, would be acceptable. Now, again, a lot of ambiguity in the Gemara, or a lot of, not ambiguity, but just missing points of the Gemara. If I were to keep the food on the second pot on top of the first pot, would it get to the point of Yatzel Lettuce Bowl? Would it not get to the point of Yatzel Lettuce Bowl? Would it be okay if I plan on taking it off before it gets to the point of Yatzel Lettuce Bowl? So there are a lot of follow-up questions that need consideration, and right now, just simply not the venue in which to discuss it, but this obviously plays a major role in practical halacha in terms of the allowance of putting one pot on top of another just simply to rewarm the food. Just to make the obvious point, obviously, if the food in the upper pot is not yet cooked, so then, of course, you can't put it on top of the lower pot. That would be the malacha bishul. Presumably, over here, we're just talking about reheating, rewarming. Vitach es pia bebatzek. Now, in terms of having a pot and it has a lid on it, and I want to seal the lid, so one could use a piece of dough and use it to seal the pot. Interesting, Rashi over here, vitach es pia bebatzek. So Rashi says, Mibayom kol hanach menichim nami b'Shabbos. So Rashi says you can even do this kind of sealing on Shabbos itself. V'lo b'shul shi'chamo, ela b'shul shi'u m'shumarim. Now, not so that it gets hotter, but just simply as a way of preserving the heat. In other words, by putting the seal on, you're just simply going to be doing a better job preserving whatever heat is there, and that would be allowed. Now, obviously, that's a point of interest because we just learned over the course of this entire perek that one is not allowed to do hatmana b'davar she'eino mosif hevel on Shabbos. And so what you'll have to say over here is that at this point in time, the pot is not hot, it's just simply warm. But again, all this needs much more definition in terms of what this particular allowance is. Ukishem shein tomnim es hacham en kach en tomnim es hatzonein. And just like you're not allowed to do a hatmana with heat, one is not allowed to insulate cold as well. And here we see it. Meaning this is the Tosefta that speaks to the idea that hatmana was a gzera that was made by the chachamim. Both that one is not allowed to keep the hot hot, and also one is not allowed to keep the cold cold. Now, we, of course, started off our daf today by learning that you are allowed to insulate cold. But this Tosefta is telling us the other side of the story, which is that there is a position amongst Chachmei Yisrael that one is not allowed to insulate the coal. Rabbi hit the Hatman Satone. And Rabbi Yehuda Anasi gave an allowance that one is allowed to do Hatmana with coal. And we already know the background to this story, to this line of the Braisa. This wasn't Rebbe's original position, but once he heard from Rabbi Shmuel Rabbi Yossi that he allowed it, so Rebbe himself allowed it as well. And then finally the Tosef ends off. And it's a little bit unclear where this comes up, meaning what would be the flow of all the previous discussion and this part of the Tosefta. And I'm not right now in a position to explain it because I don't know. I don't know how we transition from one to the other. Ve'ein marzikin lo es ha'sholek v'lo es ha'bar b'shabbos b'shul she'yizov ha'meimah. So one is not allowed to squeeze or crush snow or ice in order so that the water will flow out of it. Avonosin l'socha kosa l'socha kar v'ein ha'choshesh. However, if you want to take the snow or the ice and you want to put it in a cup and let it melt inside of it, that would not be a problem. What is the issue of squeezing snow or crushing snow on Shabbos? Rashi writes as follows over here. Rashi says, Kedeshi Yizova Memov, second to last Rashi of the Perek, Mishum Dekamo Libeshabbos, Vidami Lamalacha, Shebore Hamayim Ha'elu. So Rashi describes over here that what you're doing is you're creating a new entity. And it is similar to the malacha of Bore Mayim. You are creating this water. Now, obviously, you're not creating the water. All you're doing is just simply changing states of matter. You're moving it now from a solid to a liquid. But nevertheless, as far as halacha views it, so now a solid and liquid are two separate states of matter. They are two separate entities. And when you are actively converting something from a solid state into a liquid state, so that is like you're being molded. It's like you're creating a new entity. And that would be prohibited on Shabbos. Now, with this Rashi, so then we can discuss a question which is very practical, and I'm not here to conclude on the matter, but just something which is extraordinarily practical, and that is, what if you go in the other direction? What if you go ahead and you take a liquid and turn it into a solid, otherwise known as making ice cubes? So if the issue is the way Rashi just described it, that one is prohibited from taking the snow and actively turning it into water is because you're not allowed to change states of matter, so then would it make a difference, seemingly, whether I go from a solid to a liquid or from a liquid to a solid? And if I were to read the Rashi and just work with Rashi's pshat, it would sound like one cannot go from ice to water, and one cannot go from water to ice. That's what it would seem from Rashi. This issue is heavily discussed, and it is a major controversy whether one is allowed to make ice cubes. I'm not here to conclude on any of these matters, just simply telling you that the starting point for the entire discussion comes from our Gemara and comes from the Rashi that we just read together. Hajolach ben Atomnim, and that is the end of the fourth parak of the Masechta. And here we begin now the fifth parak of Masechta Shabbos. And over the course of this parak and over the course of the next parak, for parakim 5 and 6, so we get to speak about the malacha of Hotza'ah, of carrying on Shabbos. If we were to do a page count in Masechta Shabbos, right, the Masechta itself is very long. It has over 150 blot. And if we were to do a page count and a word count in terms of the most discussed topic in this Masechta, so my best guess would be is that Hotza'ah is probably the one that is discussed most extensively. We open the Masechta with the Malach of Hotza'ah. The 11th Perek is dedicated to the topic of Hotza'ah, and the Gemara discusses also Hotza'ah in many other prakim as well. So I think it's fair to say that Hotza'ah is a fan favorite of Chachmei Yisrael as a topic to discuss. And over here, in this Perek, we're going to be starting off the Malach of Hotza'ah in the context of one's animals that one owns. We have a couple of psukim in the Torah that state very clearly that one has to make sure that not only do you keep Shabbos, but your family members keep Shabbos, your Avadim keep Shabbos as well, your Eved Kenani, your Shivcha Kenanis have to keep Shabbos, they have to observe Shabbos, and your animals have to observe Shabbos as well. Later on, and I forget which staff it is, so I'm looking forward to helping remind myself, later on, Tosfos is going to ask a question, how are you supposed to make sure that your animal is going to be Shomer Shabbos? Like, your animal can't go out into the field and start eating grass from the ground, which is, of course, what an animal is going to do. and you're supposed to stop him from doing that because that's the malach of kosher. So the answer is obvious and intuitive. You don't have to stop your animal from doing that. When it says that your animal has to be shomer Shabbos, it means that you cannot do anything with your animals that would be a violation of Shabbos. So that means to say, as we're going to be discussing in the course of our perek, that if you put something on the animal that is not there to serve and protect the animal, but just simply a burden on the animal, so that would now be the animal carrying as a result of your actions, and that would be now you violating Shabbos because you are not allowing your animal to rest on Shabbos. The animal going and eating and grazing, that obviously is not, that's not a you issue. You don't have to stop your animal from doing that, but if you put something on the animal that is not serving and protecting the animal, and it's just a burden, so now you are having the animal carry on Shabbos, and this would be your violation of the malacha of Hotzah. And the basic idea, as we start now here, the fifth perek, is that anything that's serving and protecting the animal, so that is something which is allowed. In other words, you need to take care of your animals, and if what you're putting on is a harness or a leash, something that is protecting the animal, that would be acceptable on Shabbos. That is not considered a masui. However, if it is anything other than that, and by the way, it's not considered a masui. It's an interesting Rashi, the first Rashi in the parak. I'll read it inside. Rashi says, "Adam mitzuvah shisus behem to b'Shabbos umidah demintar abei behema have a tachshit." So Rashi says over here that anything serving the animal, so we could file that under the category of tachshit. Meaning it's like jewelry for me and you. It's interesting that Rashi categorizes it as a tachshit. V'orcha, v'lo hava masui. And therefore, that is normal for the animal to go out in that. It'd be like you and I wearing any kind of jewelry. Umidi de lo minter abei. And anything that is not serving and protecting the animal, hava masui, that's considered a burden. And by you putting that on the animal, so you're in violation of not having your animal rest on Shabbos. And so the Mishnah over here is going to be extraordinarily specific in terms of which animals are allowed to use what kind of harnesses and leashes and rings in order to preserve its integrity. Now the details of the Mishnah over here are just going to go a little bit above us. We're not farmers, we're not agrarian, we are very urban. And so for us, most of this is going to be academic as we are... We are not familiar with exactly what we do to harness camels and donkeys, etc., etc. So what can an animal go out with on Shabbos and what can an animal not go out with on Shabbos? Yotze ha-gamal, as far as the camel is concerned, ba'afsar. So the halter is what is used in order to serve and protect the camel. And that would be acceptable. V'neka b'chotem. And the female camel can go out with a chotem, some sort of nose ring. Or luvdikim beprumbia. Now the luvdikim, a kind of donkey, so they can go out with a prumbia. And we will see later on that the prumbia is some sort of collar or leash. Vesus bashir. Now as far as a horse is concerned, a horse can go out with some sort of necklace. V'chol bali ashir yotze mashir. Now as far as any animal that normally goes out with some sort of necklace collar, so it can do so. V'nim shachim b'shir, and they can be pulled with this kind of collar. U'mazin aleim v'toklim bim koman. Now, if let's say, for example, this collar, this leash, becomes tameh, so you can tovel it while it's still tied around the neck of the animal. Obviously, take care in not drowning your animal as you tovel the collar, but the point the Mishnah is making over here, tangential to our discussion of Shabbos, is that if in the event you need to tovel the collar, you don't have to take it off the animal. The fitting is going to be loose enough so that when it goes into the mikvah, it will be enveloped in the water and there will not be a chatzitza. And the same thing is true regarding hazah. If it needs to be sprinkled with the solution of the paraduma, so you don't have to take it off the animal. Again, the loose fitting is such that you could do the hazah while it's still around the neck of the animal. Okay, so that is the Mishnah. So the Mishnah basically gave us a listing of the types of animals and the types of instruments that they wear which serve and protect the animal. My naka b'chotem. So the Gemara says, when we're talking about the naka, what were you talking about? So I'm a rabbi b'rachana nakta chivarta. So the Gemara says that we're talking about a white a white animal. Rashi writes over here, again, all this to us, at least to me, is not information that is intuitive. Rashi says that the white species are they're a tougher species, and they are apt to run away. They need a more secure form of leashing, and bizamama de parzala. And we're talking about using some sort of iron muzzle over here. So, okay, so in other words, it needs even a higher shmira. Luvdikim b'prumbia amrevuna chamra luva b'pagi de parzala. So we're talking about a donkey that comes from Luba. Rashi doesn't tell us where it is. Rashi just simply says that it's a particular geography. And in terms of ensuring that the animal doesn't run away, you put it around with pagi de parzala. So the some sort of iron leash or iron collar. And the Gemara just quickly fills in with us a short anecdote. So Levi sent his money to Bechuzai, and what he wanted to do is he wanted to purchase one of these Lubian donkeys. And so these Lubian donkeys are a serious commodity, and so Levi wanted to make a purchase. Now Rashi over here quotes the Gemara in Baba Kama. The Gemara in Baba Kama says that Luba was not close. It was really far away. To quote the Rashi inside, Rashi is a little bit below where we are in the Gemara. It takes a half a year, says Rashi, to seemingly go back and forth. Whatever the case is, this was a serious investment and a serious purchase. And Bechuzai apparently were the people who were shuttling back and forth. They were the ones who were doing the transport. And Saru Shadrule Sa'are. And what they did is as follows. When Bechuzai received the money from Levi in order to make this purchase, so they took the money, they wrapped it and sent it back to Levi together with barley. And basically, and the Gemara is going to spell this out, they were communicating the following to Levi. Do us a favor. Save your money. You want to buy the Lubian donkey because you think it's so strong and it's so good? Here's what you do. Next time you feed your own donkeys, feed them barley. And when you feed them barley, your donkeys will be as strong or nearly as strong as that of the Lubian donkeys, and there's no need for you to make this kind of exotic investment. Lameimar, the Gemara just simply spells that out. Lameimar de negiri de chamra sa'are. Literally, the steps of the donkey are fueled by barley. In other words, if you want a strong donkey, you'll just simply feed a barley, and that will be good enough. Okay, a short anecdote in terms of you see that the Lubian donkey was both exotic, sought after, but at the same time, the Gemara says, save your money. You can use just a regular donkey, and that would be good enough. I'm Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel Machlifim Lifnei Rebbe. Shelzu bezu mahu. Now, in the Mishnah was actually extraordinarily specific, despite my really inadequate ability to describe these various tethers. But the Mishnah, however, was very specific in terms of which tethering is used for which kind of animal. And when they went to Rebbe, they probed Rebbe, they poked Rebbe with basically, what happens if I were to switch these different types of tethers? So mahu, nekar be'afsar, lo tibayalach. So the Gemara says, well, let's say, instead of using the, I'm sorry, let's say I take the nekar. Now the nekar was a really strong animal, and I use for it the afsar. Now the Mishnah says chota, meaning in order to make sure that it is really that I really have control of the animal, so the neka needs a nose ring, and that presumably gives it more control. But if I take the neka and I use a halter in order to try to control it, so the Gemara says loti bayalach, that wouldn't even be a question. Because there's no way that the halter can secure this type of female camel. And so therefore, it is not going to be there to serve and protect it. And so therefore, it's a muscle. And it would be carrying. And the owner of the animal would be in violation of Shvisas Behema. That's clear. Kiti Bailach Gama B'chotam, Mai. But if I, let's say, for example, we talk about the camel. Now the camel, you can use a halter in terms of securing it and making sure that you have control over it. And therefore, it's serving and protecting the camel. But let's say, instead of using the halter, we use a chotam, we use a nose ring for a camel, which is more than necessary. And now here comes the wonderful question of the Gemara. if I'm using a shmirah that's excessive, meaning obviously it'll work, it'll be functional, but it is excessive, would that be okay? Would that still be considered shmirah? Or because it's excessive, so therefore it's more than I need, and therefore it files under the category of masui? And the Gemara spells out this question. Came to Sagaliba Afsar, since we could have gotten away with using a halter for the camel, masui hu, so therefore this is excessive and therefore files under the category of masui. O dilma nitirusa yaserasa lo amrina masui hu. Or maybe no. Maybe just because I'm using a little extra in terms of protection, more protection than necessary, but when all said and done, the animal will be protected with this device, in this case, the ring for the camel, and therefore, it's fine, and it doesn't qualify as a masui. So I'm lefan of Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi kachamar Abba. So Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi says, this is what my father said. Second time in today's daf that Rabbi Shmuel b'Rabbi Yossi is quoting his father. We learned on the Amud Aleph regarding his citation of his father, that his father allowed for the installation of cold. And now, second time that Rabbi Shmuel is quoting his father. And he says, and this is what my father said. Arba behemos yosim ba'afsar, as far as the halter is concerned, four animals are equipped with the halter. Which means to say that the halter is good for the following four animals. Susa perd v'gamav v'chamor. So the horse, and the mule, and the camel, and the donkey. So for all four of these animals, the halter is good. Now, lamute mai. Now, he's not giving farming advice, and he's not sharing with us how to care for animals. This obviously was a halachic statement. And the Gemara says, my love lemute gamal bechota. And presumably what he means is as follows. Because he is citing of one of the four animals, the camel, which is used with a halter, so it's presumably what he means to say by that is, and don't use a nose ring, because a nose ring would be excessive, and therefore that doesn't qualify as a tachshit. It qualifies as a masui. Isn't that what he means? And the Gemara says, not necessarily. So the Gemara says, no. All he meant is that when you have this really wild camel, so the halter is not good enough. It's insufficient. And therefore, it's not shmira. And therefore, would be a masui. The Masis and Tana, now we have a braisa, luvdikim v'gamal yosim b'afsar. In the braisa, it says very clearly, when they have the luvdikim, those are the very strong mules or donkeys, And the gamal, so they can go out with an afsar. They are allowed to be taken out with an afsar. And the point over here is that even the luvdikim themselves would be considered shmira when taken out with the afsar. Now, if you look back in the Mishnah says luvdikim can go out with prumbia. Now, I guess the assumption is that prumbia is not as intense as the afsar, and yet when I use the afsar for the luftikim, so that would be acceptable, even though it's more than what you need. And so in this brisa, you can draw out from this brisa the point that even though I'm using a shmira that's excessive, but it's still considered shmira and it's still considered a tachshit. Kitanai, the Gemara points out, if I use something that is excessive in terms of shmira, whether or not it still qualifies as shmira or it qualifies as masui, the Gemara now says it's a machlokas atanayim. And here we have a brisa, ein chayotze besugar, a wild animal is not to be taken out with a collar. Chananya omer yotze besugar v'chol davar mishtamer. And Chananya is of the opinion that you could use a collar and anything which is mishtamer, anything which is going to serve and protect the animal. And the Gemara now is assuming that as far as this collar is concerned, so it's made out of chevel, it's made out of string, says Rashi, and the what exactly is the issue between the Tanakhama and Rebbe, and Chananya regarding this animal that's to be taken out with a collar? And so now the Gemara has to, because we are given such little information in the Braisa, the Gemara now is going to conjecture just a little bit. We're talking about a large wild animal, misagale sugar. Collar is simply not going to be enough. We're talking about a smaller wild animal. So milo sagale sugar. So is the collar enough? And the collar is more than enough. Alav chatul ika benayhu. So the Gemara says that we're talking about a cat. Now, when we say cat, not really clear if we're talking about the kind of cats that you and I are used to, but whatever the case is. Now, Tanakama Saba came to Sagale, Bimisna Ba'ama, Masihu. And now the Gemara says, assuming, and that of course is an assumption, but assuming we're talking about a cat, What do you need in order to serve and protect the cat? So the Gemara says, Mistam ba'amla. You just need a string, meaning you don't need any, you don't even need this elaborate collar. A string would be enough. Now, you can't really ask me exactly what the string is, how the string is being used. I don't even know what kind of cat we're really talking about. But we all get the basic premise of the Gemara, is that you don't need the collar. Something less than that would be adequate. And the Tanakhama says, so when I use something that's excessive, it falls under the category of a masu, it's a burden, and that would be a violation of Shvisus Behema. And the position of Chananya is that no, that even though this is excessive in nature, but look, it's protecting the cat, and even though it's excessive, but it is still considered a shmira, and therefore it's not a violation of Shvisus Behema. And now, it's funny, normally when the Gemara says, that's the assumption, the Gemara says, yeah, but we don't have to buy into the assumption. But interesting, the Gemara over here says, no, that in fact is the machlokas between the Tanakhama and Chananya. And the Gemara gives a ruling, the Gemara quotes, in the name of Shmuel, that the halacha is like Chananya. And so, the Gemara concludes that if I'm using something to harness the animal, and even though the item is providing more shmira than necessary, it is a little over the top in terms of shmira, but as far as Shabbos is concerned, as far as violating the Isser Shvisas Behemto, the Gemara concludes it is not a violation of Shvisas Behemto, even though it is more than necessary. And let's just finish up our morning with a story. Levi, Berei Rav Huna Bar Chiya, V'Rabba Rav Huna Hava Ka'azle Be'orcha. So the Gemara describes how these two Amoraim were on the way. They were traveling, and they were on the road, and they were driving the old-fashioned transportation vehicles, and that, of course, they were traveling on donkeys. Kad mechamra de Levi lechamra de Rabba bar Rav Huna. So Levi cut off Rabba bar Rav Huna. Levi is the student. Rabba bar Rav Huna is the Rebbe. And Levi cut off his Rebbe. Chalash taite de Rabba bar Rav Huna. Now Rabba bar Rav Huna experienced chalishas adas. So he was a little bit taken aback that his student's aggressive driving, and more than just the aggressive driving, but he cut off his Rebbe, and he felt that was an affront, that was a slight. Amar emale milsiki hechi di suse daite. So Levi quickly thought on his feet, and Levi said, oh boy, I better think quickly, I better say something quickly to my Rebbe, because I see that he's really upset. Amar le, and so now Levi asks his Rebbe the following question. Chamor she'askal v'ra'im, we're on the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph. When you have a donkey who misbehaves kagon zeh, like this donkey, points to his own donkey. So brilliant. He's asking him a halachic question, but in doing so, he's also communicating to his Rebbe, look, my donkey's out of control. It looked like I cut you off, but I didn't cut you off. My donkey's just simply, he's misbehaves. So mao letzeis b'prumbia b'shabbos. So can I take this donkey and can I harness him with a prumbia on Shabbos? Now you remember, we said that when it comes to a donkey, a halter is all you need. Now, prumbia is a stronger type of tethering. And so, what he's asking his Rebbe is, look, you see that this donkey over here is unruly, unrulier than most donkeys. And so, can I use a prumbia in order to harness it? He says, what do you mean? Your father, quoting in the name of Shmuel, says, Halacha k'chananya, that you could use any type of excessive harnessing. If you're using something which provides greater shmira, that doesn't qualify as a masu, that still qualifies as a shomer, and one would be allowed to use it on Shabbos. So, he accomplished two things. One, he assuaged his Rebbe. He cut off his Rebbe. He saw that his Rebbe was upset. He assuaged him. And two, he also confirmed the halacha that when you're using something that provides extra shmira, nevertheless, that still falls under the category of shmira, and that would be fine. You can harness your animal with this harness, even though it's providing more protection than necessary. Let's quickly recap our daf today. The first part of today's daf concluded the topic of Hatmana, and we discussed a number of topics regarding Hatmana. One, we talked about Hatmana Sonein, the installation of kol. We saw that it was a topic of controversy, yet Rebbe was of the position that one is allowed to insulate with kol. The Mishnah told us that one is allowed to insulate kol on Shabbos. But we do see, however, that this was a point of controversy. We see even that Rebbe changed his position over the course of his lifetime once he heard that Rav Yossi gave an allowance to do so. We spoke today on the Amud Aleph regarding Hosafa. Let's say you want to add insulation. Again, just as a reminder, we're talking about davar she'eino mosif hevel, something that is not adding to the heat. So are you allowed to add insulation? The answer is yes. You can even take off insulation, meaning if you want either less or more insulation, that would both be okay. We spoke this morning on the Amud Aleph about re-insulation, that if you had it already insulated on Shabbos, you take it out, you could put it back into the insulation again. We saw a tremendous chiddush by Tosfos, and that is that even if you actively do so on Shabbos by taking it out of the insulation, you could have put it back into the insulation again. The prohibition, the gzera de rabbanan, is only insulating for the first time on Shabbos. But if it's just a continuation of an insulation that was done before Shabbos, that would be okay. We spoke today also about hatman and a kli sheni. Hatman and a kli sheni is perfectly allowable. That we learned together in the Tosefta. And as we turn to the top of the Amud Beis and just review, we also spoke about the issues of putting one pot on top of another pot, and that would be okay, although, admittedly, the Gemara's discussion of it is extraordinarily vague, and it's not clear whether that's a continuation of the discussion of Hatmana or that actually is talking about rewarming food on Shabbos. And as I pointed out, much halacha to discuss over there, but in the context of learning the daf, so we just learned the Gemara. And then finally, the end of the Perek took us off on a little bit of a tangent in terms of crushing ice on Shabbos, turning it into water. One cannot do that. One could take the ice and put it into water and allow the ice to melt. That would be fine. But to actively crush the ice and turn it into water, that one is not allowed to do. And we quoted the Rashi. Rashi says, because you're creating a new state of matter on Shabbos, which is prohibited. That is the end of the fourth Perek. We began this morning the fifth Perek. The fifth Perek, we introduce ourselves to the idea that your animal cannot carry on Shabbos. Anything that is serving the protecting the animal is considered shmira. And I showed you the Rashi in the beginning of the Perek. Rashi, interesting Rashi. He says it's shmira and therefore falls under the category of tachshit. It would be like you and I wearing jewelry on Shabbos, which, by the way, is going to be the topic of the sixth Perek of the Masechta. But under certain circumstances, it's allowed. And so therefore, for the animal, it serves as a tachshin, would be allowed. However, if it's not serving and protecting the animal, so then it's a masui, and that would be prohibited for the animal to go out on Shabbos. You, the owner of the animal, are violating the isser of shvisas behema when your animal is carrying a masui on Shabbos, carrying some sort of burden. And then the Mishnah goes into the specifics about which animals are going to be tethered with which kind of device. Halters, nose rings, collars. I'm only just taking stabs at what exactly they are. Obviously, all this doesn't speak to the urban side of me. In the meantime, however, the Gemara does discuss a conceptual topic, and that is the issue of whether or not I'm using a harness or a tether that's going to be excessive. It's more than what this particular animal needs. And is that going to be considered a masui? And the Gemara points out, after some discussion on the matter, machlokes hatanayim, Chananya is lenient, and the Gemara says, and that's the halacha. Halacha falls like Chananya, that if I'm using a harness that is excessive in nature, but as long as it's there to protect the animal, even though it's more protection than what I need for this animal, that would be fine, that would be acceptable. And then we concluded today with a story where Levi cut off his Rebbe while driving on the road. Each one of them were driving the donkeys. Levi saw that he visibly upset his Rebbe, and so Levi calmed him down by asking him a halachic question, and in doing so, also indicated that his animal is slightly unruly. Adkan, we continue tomorrow on the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph.